The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us. Dave Kellner here, ready to take you through the five televised games in the Premier League. I will talk Arsene Wenger as well. That news broke just after last week's podcast. He is ending his 22-year tenure at Arsenal. We'll discuss the betting for his successor as well, and we'll reflect on the Champions League semi-finals in the company of the executive secretary of the FWA. Paul McCarthy is going to link up with us later on. We'll also have bets from the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2 with Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross, and Sam Norris will stop by with his best bet in Europe as well. But first, as always, we'll get stuck into the betting for the Premier League televised matches in the company of, first of all, Derek McGovern. Good afternoon to you, Derek.
Good day to you, David.
How are you? Are you well?
Yes, they're still bubbling after my lovely Red Men's performance in midweek. 1 foot in the final, which basically means one hand holding the trophy after watching the second semi-final.
Fabulous Mo Salah. Mr. Phelps joins us on the podcast for the third week in succession as well. Mo Salah, Mr. Phelps, now 6-4 to be crowned the world's best footballer by winning the Ballon d'Or. I think Derek's comments throughout the season on this podcast might have inspired the Egyptian king.
Yeah, no doubt. It's saying about the third in 3 weeks. It feels like it's the third today. I've done the punt. Mo Salah, Derek, I put up that 100-1 shot for you.
Oh, yeah,
the week,
I forgot
about
this.
It was Salah to win the Ballon d'Or, Liverpool to win the Champions League, and Egypt to reach the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Please tell me you put a pound on.
Of course, I have £200 each way on that one. You know what, listen to me. Please listen to me once and for all about this Salah nonsense. Right, he's hit the headlines after the midweek. He scored 2 goals and made 2. Well, great, yeah, he had a good game. But someone else scored 2 goals and made 2 that day. Roberto Firmino. Did not get mentioned, not a line of copy about him. Why?
Derek, Roberto Firmino hasn't scored 31 Premier League goals this season. And if he gets one more, that will make him the all-time outright top scorer in a 38-game season in the Premier League, Derek. That's why.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you'll remember, if you're old enough, you youngsters, that Clive Allen did pretty much the same. In fact, he scored more than Salah in that season in the late 80s. Following season, off to Bordeaux. Salah is the most clear one-season wonder I have ever witnessed in my life. I've watched him closely the last 6 months.
Clive Allen's still getting the odd gig on ITV, though, Derek.
Is he?
Not like
is
he's
he
washed
really,
up,
yeah?
Is it?
Yeah. Well, we might get Salah on the podcast midway through next season. Listen, I've watched him closely.
The one thing I will say is
all
these people saying that Mo Salah's like the best player in the world. And I know there's that argument where you say, well, is he the best player in the world right now? But, to even utter his name in the same breath as Messi and Ronaldo is laughable. Because until he's done that for season after season after season after season. But this season, he clearly is, one of the best players in Europe. I think it was the way he almost orchestrated that performance, because it was him who started the scoring off, and it was him who got that crowd, it was almost fever pitch anyway, but then just kind of turned it into a crescendo of noise at Anfield. I just think, I know you're only joking. I know you love him really. I know you're just saying this for effect, but Mo Salah, wherever you'll be.
I'll let me answer those points firstly. Yeah, he had a good game the other night. He was due one. Because I've watched him 6 months, and basically every game I've watched him, he's been abysmal. But his goals shield him from flak. And that's all he does. He scores goals, and 89 minutes of uselessness is forgotten because he'll lift a goal into the corner. And people like might
say, it's like saying a goalkeeper stands there in his, between his post for 78 minutes and he has a good last 10 minutes. It's like that's what players do, isn't it? Central defenders can't do everything all match. But then if they make, you know, a goal saving header on the line or something in the last minute, then they've done the job. Same for a striker, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Well, that's the thing you see. That's another argument entirely. People say that. A lot of people will say, well, that's what he's there for, score goals. No, he's not. He's there to score goals and do a lot more. And I've been arguing that for about the last 20 years. And finally, Pep Guardiola has listened to me, which is why Aguero is never a certain starter, because he wants more from his strikers than mere goals. With Salah, that's all you get. And you won't get it next season because he'll dry up.
Can you get Pep on this podcast, given your relationship with him?
Let's get stuck into this week's matches then, chaps. Liverpool, first of all. Let's talk more about Liverpool. They take on Stoke in the first televised game in the Premier League. 2-7 Liverpool to win this game. The draw 9-2. Stoke in the betting at 9-1. They're probably, Derek, not bothered about third spot now. And I'm sure they'll make a ton of changes for this game. But their record against Stoke is outstanding. They've never lost in 54 previous home games against Stoke in the top flight. They've won 43 of those and drawn 11. And Stoke are without a win in their last 12 Premier League fixtures as well. So the betting suggests this is going to be severely one-sided. What do you think?
No, I don't agree because of the Champions League involvement for Liverpool, of course. I mean, not that Stoke are any great shake. They were in the relegation zone under Mark Hughes, still in it under Paul Lambert, and that means they've either been saddled with two absolutely useless managers or 11 absolutely useless players. My hunch is both. At least, though, Stoke have finally woken up and realised that to get points you need to score some goals. Earlier in the season, I thought they'd announced a ceasefire. My son thinks their full name is Stoke Nil. That's how useless they've been, but they've scored in their last three matches. And this is where my bet is going. They've got to score against Liverpool. They can't go to Liverpool far to round looking for a 0-0 draw because they're too far adrift at the bottom. They need to win. They've got to win games now. So they'll come out. So Liverpool are obviously going to score. And I would suggest Stoke are going to score because they have done the last two times they've been to Anfield. And they've been paced 4-1 each time, but they scored a goal. So both teams to score 10-11. I like that.
Just to give you a little peek behind the curtain here, when Lee said it feels like the third time we've recorded this podcast today, that's because it is the third time we've recorded this podcast today. And Derek, you said off-air as well, maybe my joke will get a bigger laugh this time, my best joke. Was that your best material there, Derek? Was that it? Just so listeners are aware.
What chance is it, Sam? I mean, I was going to throw in another one then, but that would just look pathetic, so no, forget it. On your bike.
Liverpool versus Stoke, Lee, how do you view this?
I kind of agree with a lot of what Derek said there. It's difficult to know which Liverpool will turn up, given that we're in the middle of those two matches with Roma. Going back to, I won't go back over the Salah argument, but one thing that I did think was interesting that I read a stat about James Milner is now the player who's had the most assists in a Champions League campaign.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
You think about some of the players who played in the Champions League and he holds that record. So maybe it's just the kind of, the style of play that Liverpool have got. Obviously, Mo Salah's having this unbelievable breakout season for Liverpool, and you've got Firmino and everyone else. But my favourite thing from midweek was a tweet from Jonathan Liu who said, it reads as this, excerpt from the documentary Il Miracolo di Roma, 2038. So we're casting ourselves 20 years ahead of time here. This is the translator. We were down and out, beaten. Then we saw Danny Ings coming on. Even though we were 5-0 down, we all felt this was an insult too far. So that's what sparked this comeback, which hopefully won't happen next week. I bring it up because Danny Ings is 17-20 to score in this game. I mean, I didn't even know Danny Ings was still at Liverpool. It just shows like kind of how lopsided the betting is in this. Obviously, I couldn't bring myself to back that. We don't know if Salah's going to play, obviously. You would think he would be rested because an injury to Salah would be catastrophic. Same for Firmino, though. You could argue the same. So what team will Liverpool play? Obviously, they've got injuries to deal with, and they've got that. As a manager, it must be a difficult decision to make when you have got to still keep getting points, albeit they probably are safe where they are on the table. Stoke, the opposite. They have to get points. It's just they have to come out and play. Now, whether they can come out and play is open to debate. One interesting stat is that no side has conceded more first goals than Stoke. 21 in the Premier League. And Liverpool have opened the scoring 24 times in their matches this season. When you look at the home games of Liverpool, they've scored a lot of first half goals. In fact, in 11 of the 17 home games, they've scored in the first half. In 8 of the 17, they've scored inside the first 30 minutes. So Liverpool to score first, up to and including the 30th minute was the bet I was looking at. 17-20, which admittedly is better than Danny Ings to score at 17-20, but a little bit skinny for a bet that you need quite a lot to go for you. So I'm looking a bit more simple. Both teams to score, can't disagree with that. I think Stoke will have to try and score, and I think Liverpool may tire as the game goes on. But the old classic, match result, both teams to score, Liverpool 17-10 for me.
On to Swansea versus Chelsea. 5:30 kick-off on Saturday. Swansea 6-1 to win this game. The draw 3-1. Chelsea in the betting at 1-2. As things stand, Swansea are 4 points clear of the drop zone, but they do still have Southampton and Stoke to play, albeit those two fixtures are at the Liberty Stadium. And Carlos Carvalhal has done a good job, Lee, but you look through their record recently, they've not won since early March, and they come onto this on the back of that 5-0 humbling against Manchester City last weekend.
Yeah, I think Chelsea, a lot of people have been quick to write them off and say that, you know, I know Andy Excel has been, you know, on them all season saying that, you know, they're not really at it and they've got their eye on the World Cup, which I think is largely true. But you just look at the results, those two away results at Southampton and Burnley in the Premier League. You know, went 2 down against Southampton, turned the style on, 1-3-2. That was after 60 minutes. The first goal they scored was 70 minutes. Burnley, obviously equalised, no easy place to go this season. Burnley, they're in seventh, only 10 points behind Chelsea, but then still got the winner in the end. So I think they'll have too much for Swansea here. I think you're right as well about the, you know, in terms of Swansea's form has been good. You look at their overall form recently, and you just wonder if they're on the slide a little bit, and if a defeat to Chelsea here might further hamper their quest to stay up. They've got Bournemouth away after that, then they've got two huge games, Southampton at home and Stoke at home. Home advantage is massive there, but 5-2 for Swansea to go down is definitely worth a look, given that if this is a bad result for them, and you don't get much at Bournemouth, then suddenly the pressure is really on, and they don't strike me as a sort of club who reacts particularly well to pressure. They're better if they're kind of in the quiet. For me here, for not wanting to sound like a broken record, but I think Chelsea to win and both teams to score again. I think, you know, going with that Southampton away performance, the Burnley one, it just looks like, you know, that's what they're about at the minute. Chelsea, they'll turn it on when they need to. 3-1 for both teams to score and Chelsea to win is a damn sight better than that 2-1 on for the plain old Chelsea win.
Yeah, I like it. 3-1 Chelsea to win the game with both teams scoring. Swansea have beaten Arsenal and Liverpool already this season. They're looking to become the first non-big side, in inverted commas, to win three games against those clubs this Premier League season. Is there a chance for Swansea here, Derek, 6-1?
Well, not a bad price, is it? The big C derby, isn't it? Swansea and Chelsea. I think this game will hinge upon what happens at Anfield, and I wouldn't have a bet on it until I find out what happens at the Liverpool-Stoke game. Because, you know, people are writing off Chelsea's top four hopes, and you look at it and you think, well, they're 8 points behind Liverpool. But they've got a game in hand, win that, that's 5 points behind. They play Liverpool at Chelsea, win that, they're only 2 points behind with a couple of games to go. So if Liverpool drop points against Stoke in the afternoon, I think Chelsea will be bang at it and they'll beat Swansea. If, however, Liverpool pick up 3 points, and the odds suggest they will, I don't think they'll try a leg in this, and Swansea could be a bet at 6-1. So hold your guns.
OK, hold fire on that, perhaps. Swansea in the betting at 6-1. Draw 3-1. Chelsea odds on at 1-2.
It's been profitable to follow Lyon over the last few months, and their good form has seen them move to within touching distance of the top two. And I wouldn't bet against them reeling in Monaco now to claim second spot in the table. They're just 1 point behind Monaco, whose form has been patchy of late. Meanwhile, Lyon are the form dogs in the division and have an unblemished record in their last six matches in the league, collecting maximum points in each. Don't expect that to stop this weekend when they welcome Nantes. The away side have failed to keep a clean sheet in their last five games as visitors, and with the way Lyon are scoring at present, this looks booked for goals too. Lyon to win and over 2.5 goals in the match looks an obvious bet at 4-6, and I believe this will land comfortably. It would have been a winner in their last three games. but there may be even more value by playing Lyon to score over 2.5 themselves and take Nantes out of the equation. That's 23-20 and has been a winner in 4 of their last 5 games after they put 3 past Marseille and Amiens and 5 past Dijon and Metz. This looks the bet for me this week. Lyon to score 3 or more goals in the match at 23-20.
Now let's move on to West Ham versus Manchester City. 2:15 on Sunday, this one. The Hammers are 8-1 to win it. The draw 4-1. Manchester City in the betting at 1-2-3. City have moved on to 90 points now after putting their Champions League disappointments behind them. They've had convincing victories at Wembley against Spurs last week. And last week against Swansea in their last couple of fixtures. And West Ham, Derek, aren't yet mathematically safe. They probably need one more point to ensure survival, and they've got a pretty difficult running as well, starting with this game, and they lost out last weekend against Arsenal. That was down to a Declan Rice error, which David Moyes was quick to point out. Moyes again working his magic at another club.
Well, I mean, in his defence, managing West Ham is among the hardest jobs in football. Narrowly worse than watching them, I think. You want about 30 odd thousand fans turn up every week, and every one of them can do a better job, so you'd have us believe. And when Sam Allardyce was their manager, I actually believed them. City are 1-3 for two reasons. Firstly, they love playing at the London Stadium. I think Pep Guardiola, a couple of seasons ago, they won 5-0 or something, pasted West Ham, and he was saying the stadium fits them, the pitch suits them. So you can understand why they're 1-3, and bookies maybe swallowing that line that City want to set a new points record. They might be right. They might want to do that. But I don't want to take that chance at 1-3. No, thank you very much. If I was a City player, I wouldn't be trying a leg in this game. It's understandable that they turned it on last week after they'd won the title because they were at home and it was a party atmosphere. Going to West Ham, the title's already in the bag. You've got a World Cup coming up. Nah, not for me. I'm going to go for West Ham.
And the Hammers for Derek, 8-1. West Ham, 8-1. Lee, I mean, City, they are just chasing records now. They've got 98 Premier League goals this season. Only 3 teams before them have reached 100 in the history of the Premier League. And they're also 1 win away from equaling Chelsea's record of 30 wins in a single Premier League campaign as well. Chelsea set that record last season. So City are just chasing records now, Lee.
Yeah, City to win and both teams to score. I'm joking. I'm not going to go for that again. It'd be too easy just to pick that bet out every time, wouldn't it?
Oh, I think he's got a chance, though, in this one.
Maybe I have.
7-4.
Yeah. I understand what Derek's saying. I think a lot of it makes complete sense. And, you know, kind of, you know, the Derek McGovern betting bible would never let you back anything at short a price as this with the team not needing to win. But I've disregarded the Derek McGovern betting bible for about 15 years, so I'm not going to start paying attention to it now. Man City, I think, do want to win records, and I think they want to get records. I think they want to add that to their stature, same way Man United did over the course of their illustrious time at the top of English football. Man City minus a goal, can understand why people would go for that, 3-4. Touch of odds on, but you know, given their record at West Ham, and their goal-scoring ability, and I can see that happening. West Ham seem to have given up the ghost, really. I know that maybe not safe from relegation, but they will be safe this season. The bet I like, though, going back to Mo Salah, because we haven't mentioned him enough, winning the Player of the Year gong over most people's choice, I guess, in away from football, Kevin De Bruyne. I just wonder if, you know, Kevin De Bruyne scored last week. I wonder if maybe one of the reasons the players didn't vote him for that accolade, that he doesn't score the goals that maybe you'd expect him to get. He's got 8 Premier League goals this season. Probably not enough of a return that you'd want to see from him. He doesn't need to because he plays for Man City and they've got goals everywhere. But he scored last week, and I wonder if that was a little bit of a two fingers up saying, yep, here I am. 13-5 to score any time in this game. And when you look back at the teams he scored against, he's a bit of a flat track bully when it comes to goals. He scored in big wins. He scored in the 4-0 win at Swansea in December, the 4-1 win at home to Tottenham. He scored against Bristol City in the League Cup. He scored against West Brom in a 3-0 win. He scored at Cardiff. He scored at Bristol City in the League Cup again, the away leg there. So the 5-0 against Swansea, scored for Belgium in a 4-0 win over Saudi Arabia. So I'm going to go transit a little bit here. 13-5 for Kevin De Bruyne to stick another two fingers up and say, yeah, There I am. I should have been the player of the year.
I like it. Kevin De Bruyne to score in that game. Let's move on to Manchester United versus Arsenal. Sunday, 4:30, this one at Old Trafford. United are 4-9 to win it. The draw, 16-5, with Arsenal in the betting at 13-2. And we are recording this prior to Arsenal's clash with Atletico Madrid in the Europa League. So do bear that in mind. And it will be interesting here, Lee, to see what sort of welcome, in inverted commas, Arsene Wenger gets in his last ever trip to Old Trafford. And we were sent an email earlier in the week with Wenger's first 11 that he ever faced Manchester United with. Just read through the names here. Seaman was in net. Winterburn, Bold, Adams, Keown and Dixon played at the back. Vieira, Platt and Merson were in midfield. And Wright and Bergkamp up front. The question is the team he inherited better than the one that he'll put out this weekend? And two names and four words here, Alex Iwobi and Danny Welbeck. I think the unanimous verdict has to be yes, he inherited a better side than he's leaving Arsenal with.
Yeah, there's obviously been a lot of chat this week, you know, on radio stations and TV and column inches in the papers about his legacy. I think he'll be remembered as a great manager in the end, but yeah, you're right. You know, he did inherit a good side. I mean, you know, it's amazing how many English names are in that list as you run down there, and it was like kind of the backbone of the England national team. A lot of those players were in that team then, and it's changed immeasurably. I don't think he ever quite got to grips with, you know, signing defenders or goalkeepers to keep the, you know, keep the goals out. Obviously, he had, you know, a rich history of selling quality front players. Going back to your other question about the reception you'll get here, probably not a great one, I wouldn't suggest. He's not got great memories of the place, really. I mean, his first game at Old Trafford he lost. He suffered the worst ever Arsenal defeat at Old Trafford. Remember that when he got sent to the stand?
Yeah, 8-2, that wasn't it.
With his arms outstretched. And he... All the fans behind him were joining in and clapping. The Man United fans lording it up over Wenger, and then there's the rivalry with Mourinho. It's like a perfect storm for him, this, isn't it? He'll be hell bent on getting a result here. Man United, I know on the podcast this year they've been lamented for the way they played. I think this one could be a little bit more open. I don't think either of these teams have got an awful lot to play for in the league, obviously, but Arsenal. Return leg against Atletico Madrid, that has to play on his mind. To win that trophy and bow out with the trophy is everything to Arsene Wenger. So as much as he wants this, I can't see the win coming. I don't mind the both teams to score draw, which is a decent enough price. But one bet I have seen, given that Arsenal, although they haven't got a very good record at Man United, they've scored in the last 8 meetings with United, and for Arsenal to score in the game, it's 7-10. So if you're looking for I think we'll land. It's not going to be beaten to nil if they lose 7-10. But I would chance my arm at the draw on both teams to score here with maybe a 1-1 or a 2-2. Entertaining game.
That's 4-1 here with William Hill. Arsenal have now lost their last 5 on the road in the Premier League. They've not lost 6 in a row in the top flight since a run of 7. That was way back in January 1966. And United unbeaten in their last 10 home league matches against Arsenal, which is an exceptional record. So he might be, Derek, hell-bent on getting a result, but whether or not Arsenal can is a different consideration entirely. And that's reflected in the betting, though, Derek. Manchester United 4-9 to win this.
Yeah, exactly. You look initially and you think 13-2 Arsenal. When were they last there? And you almost attempted to have them a bet. And then you realise that, you know, it's the second leg of the Europa League next week. Wenger will make changes if he's got any sense, and that's debatable. They're useless at Old Trafford anyway. They're useless wherever they go now. Arsenal, no point at all away from the Emirates this year. And then you begin to think that United are good things. I don't think that. I know that United will win this easily.
Okay, Manchester United. Perhaps on the handicap then, Derek, are we looking at Manchester United -1 or -2 here?
Well, I'd never back Mourinho teams on handicap.
Yeah.
Because he gets the job done. But went for a correct score, maybe 2-0 for United.
Manchester United to win the game 2-0 is in the betting at 13-2. And we finish with the Wembley match between Spurs and Watford at 8 p.m. on Monday. Spurs are 1-7 to win it. The draw in the betting at 7-1 with Watford 14-1. Derek, I suppose Tottenham will still have designs on that top three, despite having struggled in their last few matches. While Watford have only picked up 2 Premier League points in their last 6 now. And Harry Kane, I think, is a concern going into the World Cup. Doesn't seem to be at peak fitness, which would be a worry for the national team as we gear up for Russia in a few weeks' time now, Derek.
Well, yeah, but you say that, but he's the only man in the Premier League who can score without touching the ball. I mean, how good is that? He's gone off the boil. Spurs have gone off the boil. And I don't think there's been a shorter price in the Premier League this season than 1-7. If someone said, look, there'll be a team at 1-7 in the Premier League match this season, you wouldn't have picked Spurs, even if you knew the opponents were Watford. I can't believe Watford. They are 12th. How has that happened? How are they still 12th? They've got 2 points in the world since about August, it seems, and yet they are sitting there. I just think it's time Watford buggered off to the Championship or lower. They're just annoying me. I mean, I preferred them during the Elton John years. I preferred football during the Elton John years. The only thing I didn't prefer during the Elton John years was Top of the Pops. It was just a team. I think, why do I have to waste 90 minutes of my time watching these? In fact, I'm not going to watch this game in protest. But Spurs will win. Probably by... In fact, I would go for Spurs. I think they're around 11-10 to win by more than 2.
Yeah,
I don't see why that won't happen.
That's it. Spurs -2 at 11-10. Lee, your views on this?
Yeah, I like that bet that Derek's just mentioned there. In fact, I think I put that up in the second time we recorded earlier on today. but I agree with everything Derek said about this. I mean, you know, Tottenham do seem to have kind of stumbled to a bit of a halt there. The manager saying some odd things in his post-match press conferences about whether it'll be him who takes them forward or not. Watford, yeah, I mean, it's God knows where they got all those points from. I think they just must have got them off the back of a lorry somewhere during the season. They are the first team who you can definitely say have got flip-flops on, pina colada in hand, and are on the beach. Away from home, they've lost 11 of the last 12, failed to score in the last 7 trips. So Spurs, you have to back Spurs in some way. I like the bet that Robbie just that Derek's just put up there. I also like this one as well, though. Look at Christian Eriksen, who kind of gone under the radar largely this season. I think he's probably worth a look for a goal here. He's been in really good form, been involved in a lot of the recent goals that Spurs have scored. So I'd be looking at maybe Christian Eriksen to get on the score sheet. Just in a game where, you know, it's very difficult to back the home team, even though I'm sure they will win. But yeah, for me, have a look at Christian Eriksen to score at any time in the match. Someone who's, I know the assists don't count for goals, but 13-10, odds against with no Kane in the team, potentially, if they start to rest him or he doesn't play. And at 2-5, you can't back Kane to score anyway. 13-10 for Eriksen to score in this one in a healthy Tottenham win.
Haven't you been listening, Lee? Assists don't count, full stop.
For anything.
Okay, I'm about to get kicked out of this studio, so we'll wrap up with the naps this week. Do you want to go first, Lee?
Yeah, I'm torn between the Liverpool both teams to score and the Kevin De Bruyne anytime. I'm going to go Kevin De Bruyne to score anytime in a big Man City win at 13-5, and hopefully I've nicked one of Derek's bets.
You have.
Go on, what were you going to go for, Derek?
The West Ham Man City prices are wrong. I mean, normally the other way, when you're backing a team with something to play for against a team with nothing to play for, the team with something to play for should be about 1-3.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm going over the top. But West Ham shouldn't be 8-1 to beat Man City.
You
I can't go for
West
that now.
You napped there, were you?
Yeah, I was going to go West Ham for me now. 8-1.
In the first recording we did today, you asked why you weren't getting any naps, so that's your answer.
All right, then. I'll go for another one in that case.
I'll go for Liverpool both teams to score if you want.
Yeah, go on then, because I need an 8-1 winner.
All right, okay. Liverpool both teams to score
17-10
for Mr. Phelps. West Ham for Derek, 8-1. I'm going with Huddersfield. They'll beat Everton, I think, on Saturday, 13-8. Everton are appalling. Watch them on Monday night against Newcastle. They were dire. And, I think Sam Allardyce's comments afterwards just kind of obscured the view of many that Everton were any good in that game. So Liverpool at 17-10, match result on both teams to score for Lee. Derek going with West Ham at 8-1, and I'm going with Huddersfield at 13-8. That treble, 62.78-1. Lee, thank you for your company.
Thank you. The moral is, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again.
Yeah. Three recordings of this due to various technical issues. Derek, I know you're going to stay on the line with us to discuss Wenger and a bit on the Champions League as well. So you stick with us, Derek. And Lee, thank you for your company. We'll hear from Paul McCarthy from the FWA next.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, joining myself and Derek on this edition of the podcast is the Executive Secretary of the FWA, Paul McCarthy. Paul also organises the guest every single week, so thank you to Paul for that. Paul, first of all, a warm welcome, a good afternoon to you, sir.
Thank you very much. How are we doing?
Oh, very well. How are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. Just sitting, I've just come out of, I managed to scramble out of a meeting, and I'm just sitting having a coffee on a very sunny London street. So it's all's well with the world.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. Very civilised. Paul, how did you react to the news of Arsene Wenger bringing his tenure to an end after 22 years at the helm of Arsenal Football Club? That happened last Friday.
Yeah, I think even if you'd have thought it was going to happen, and I think the vast majority of people expected it to happen, it's still one of those things that comes as a huge shock. I saw it on, I clicked onto Twitter, and it was the top item on Twitter, or somebody had just posted it on Twitter, and it was crikey, I can't believe it, even though I knew it was going to happen. It was just one of those things. I mean, I remember I was at his first press conference in 1996 when he was appointed. And we'd spoken with David Dean, a couple of us beforehand, and he said, "You'll be impressed." He said he's not the normal manager of Arsenal. And given that the one of the previous managers of Arsenal had just had to leave for being accused of taking a bung, then that was quite handy. So the fact was he wasn't. He came across as very... it sounds very patronising to say, but very articulate, very intelligent, very measured. Even though, obviously, his English wasn't as good as it is now, it was still very good and a damn sight better than everybody else's French in the room. And I was impressed from start to finish. And then when you started talking to the players and the people around the club at the changes that he was making immediately, not just, you know, this was revolution, not evolution. And... you know, Arsenal were a much better football club for his presence. English football was much better for his presence.
Is that how he will be remembered then, in your eyes, Paul, as a man that revolutionised the Premier League, or as a man who outstayed his welcome and failed to adapt?
I don't think you can remember him with a bit of both. I think he's so the football that his teams played was outstanding. I think one of the things that he'll be remembered by is making Alex Ferguson changed the way that he saw football. He looked at these players that Arsenal had with Petit, Vieira, Henri when he came in, you know, even Robert Pires, who everybody thought was a bit flaky and a bit was adept at picking up injuries. You know, he was 6 foot and he could look after himself. Mm-hmm. And it changed the way that Manchester United and Sir Alex Ferguson thought of playing football. And yes, he did outstay his welcome. Where people followed him and Arsenal's example, Wenger's example and Arsenal's example for the first 10 years of his, or 11 years of his career. For the second half, nobody really followed him because everybody felt that, and rightly so, that he hadn't actually moved with the times that he introduced.
We've got betting for the next manager, next permanent Arsenal manager on the William Hill website and on the app. And Luis Enrique is the 6-4 favourite in that market. Massimiliano Allegri is 5-1. Mikel Arteta is 11-2. Joachim Löw in the betting at 8-1. Ralph Rangnick is 9-1. Brendan Rodgers 10-1, 12-1 and bigger the remainder. It doesn't appear that even Gazidis has an idea at this moment in time, Derek, about who should be the next Arsenal manager, or hasn't got anyone truly in mind at the moment.
Well, the whispers are that Luis Enrique is there if he wants it. That's what I've heard, but, you know, whether that's true or not remains to be seen. And Paul was saying that you knew it was going to happen eventually, but you still can't believe it when it did happen. Well,
I feel like that, you know, when last time I had a leg over. He told his squad last week, Wenger, apparently, you know, he had bad news, I'm leaving. And they asked what the bad news was. For the last 10 years, it's like watching a gambler chasing his losses or a squatter in a house you just can't get rid of. I mean, he's gone 10 years too late. This man won 3 titles. Everybody's putting out the bunting for him. He had Dennis Bergkamp and Thierry Henry in his side for a decade. He only won 3 titles. I'd have won 3 titles with those two. It's now safe to start betting on Arsenal again now that that clown's gone. Good riddance.
Oh, Derek. Derek. But those meetings with Sir Alex Ferguson and the rivalry they had defined the early years of the Premier League, didn't they?
Yeah, that was 10 years ago. It's like saying Madonna's a big hit now. She's not. She's had a time passed. She's had a time passed.
Who would you go for next permanent Arsenal manager, Paul?
Well, I think Luis Enrique would be a good shout. I think he's, from what I hear from my from friends and colleagues in Spain, he'd be an absolute nightmare for the media. He seems to hate the media more than certainly the previous manager. So I don't think that would be very healthy for relations. But you know, his track record at Barcelona is outstanding. Is he suited temperamentally to the Premier League? Not 100% convinced. And there seems to be some competing factions within Arsenal at the moment. There's the German faction and the Spanish, or should we say Catalan faction. I think Ivan Gazidis, I think he has this will be the defining decision of his tenure at Arsenal.
Okay, Luis Enrique, 6-4 favourite. What about you then, Derek? You're keen to answer that question as well.
Well, I'd go for Rafa Benitez. Only one choice. He'd sort them out. It'd be a magnificent choice. And you can imagine he'd leave Newcastle tomorrow to go to a job like Arsenal. It would be perfect for them.
I'm not even sure Rafa Benitez is in the betting anymore. Oh, he is. He's there. 14-1, Rafa Benitez, to be next permanent Arsenal manager.
That would be throwing good money after bad, I think. I think the myth of Rafa Benitez is such that everybody seems to be in awe of him, and I think he builds that mythology around himself. He centres on football clubs that where the fan base is, shall we say, militant at times at Liverpool and at certain Newcastle, and he rails against owners that he doesn't think he can get his own way with. And he gets journalists on his side, and he gets supporters on his side.
Not you, obviously.
Not me, obviously. Not for a long, long time, I'm afraid. I saw the way that they operated at Liverpool, and it left me stone cold. I have to tell you.
Maybe Kante and Wenger should swap jobs.
Yeah.
You can't talk like that on this podcast, Paul, because Rafa Benitez is. It's Derek McGovern's man crush, so
I know, and there are who are in awe and enthralled of Rafa Benitez. I'm afraid he leaves me stunned. It leaves me cold.
Okay, Luis Enrique has been well backed to be next permanent Arsenal manager. 6-4 here with William Hill. Let's move on from Arsene Wenger and talk about the Champions League semi-finals. We've just seen the first legs on Tuesday and Wednesday night. And Liverpool, Paul, were sensational. They beat Roma 5-2. Amazing performance. And Roma appeared to play without any plan. And it was red rag to a bull, really, because Liverpool picked them off stylishly.
Well, I think you can have a plan. I think you can have a plan against Liverpool. But when Liverpool are at their best, and they were at their supreme best for 75 minutes of that football match on Tuesday night, their pace, their directness, the fantastic understanding across the front three. I thought Firmino has been one of the great unsung heroes of this season. Not at Anfield, I would stress, but sort of through the remainder of the Premier League. And I think they were just absolutely magnificent. And I think Roma were just blown away. And I think any team, and I mean any team, would have been blown away. They get from back to front so quickly. Talking about the Arsenal. The great Arsenal teams went from goalkeeper to Henri in the blink of an eye, in a split second. And I think Salah is as close to, in terms of style, as Henri that I've seen in the Premier League since the great man retired. I think that he's a bit like Iron Robin. You know what he's going to do. He's going to come in off the right and hit it with his left. It's all very well known what he's going to do, but like Iron Robin, trying to stop him seems impossible.
Liverpool, by the way, 6-4 to win the Champions League now, just behind Real Madrid in the betting at 11-10. Derek, we talked about Mo Salah and his impact earlier on in the podcast with Lee, and how he's been sensational this season, although not sensational in everyone's eyes. But talking about the other semi-final, Real Madrid went to Germany and beat Bayern Munich 2-1. It was, in my opinion, one of the most low-quality Champions League games we've ever seen at this stage of the competition.
It was. I said a long time ago there was no outstanding team in the tournament, and that was brought home to roost on Wednesday night. That was a diabolical game, and you wouldn't even say Real Madrid are definite to go through now, even though they've got a 2-1 away win, because they looked ordinary. It just seemed like a team that's gone over the hill. Both of those sides, whereas you're getting a team like Liverpool who are just hitting their peak now. And to be honest, if Liverpool go through, and they look like, you know, they will do now, it doesn't bother me who they play in a final. I think they've got them beating the both of them. In fact, they could probably beat both of them at the same time.
I think if Liverpool go through, and they look certain at that price, I would. If I was a Liverpool fan, Del, and if I was Jurgen Klopp, I wouldn't be too worried or too frightened coming up against either Bayern or Real.
Liverpool to win the Champions League, then 6-4 looks the bet, as it looks like it's going to be Real Madrid versus Liverpool in that final, if things materialise the way the betting expects it to. Paul, thank you for your company.
No, pleasure.
Thank you, Derek.
No problem. Please speak soon.
And we're going to finish this podcast by hearing the thoughts of the chaps on the Championship, Leagues 1 and 2. So Pete Farries is coming next.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and for my Championship nap this week, I'm going for Nottingham Forest at 8-5 to beat Bristol City, who are also 8-5. Looking in towards 2018, Bristol City's away form was fantastic. They had their great cup run as well, but in 2018, their away form has been a disaster. They have not won on their travels since the 8th of December at Bramall Lane, when they won 2-1, and for me, they are not a side away from home you want to be backing. Now, of course, their final away game this season, chances of playoffs have diminished to almost zero, and it is, you would argue, all over for Bristol City. But then it's all over for Forest as well. They've not had anything to play for a long time, but with 3 wins from their last 5 home games, a narrow loss to a talented Brentford side, and a 0-0 draw with Derby, that home form versus that away form is good enough for me. My Championship nap this week is Nottingham Forest at 8-5. Let's check in with Gab Puszczalowski and his thoughts on League One.
It's the penultimate weekend of League One action. There's a number of prices that I do like this weekend. I do like Wigan at 4-9 at home to Wimbledon. They've got the title still to play for. I do like Plymouth at home to Rotherham at 13-10. Rotherham assured of a playoff place. Plymouth have got to win to break into the playoffs. But I'm backing a side who have found form just at the wrong time. Had they picked up form a month ago, they could have been the cusp of the playoffs themselves. But Blackpool have really found form, certainly at home, beating Bradford 5-0, Northampton 3-0, and Fleetwood Town 2-1 in a local derby. And Blackpool recently went to Gillingham and won 3-0 there. So Blackpool are scoring boatloads of goals, playing really good football. And they're up against a Shrewsbury Town side who found out during the week that they cannot go up automatically. They are assured of a playoff place. They've got the playoffs to get ready for, and generally when a side has the playoffs to gear up for, they start to rest players and the intensity drops a little bit before they gear back up for the playoffs. So Blackpool are my nap selection. You could actually take Blackpool -1 if you feel greedy, but my nap selection for the penultimate weekend of League One is Blackpool at 13-10 at home to Shrewsbury Town. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
For the third week in a row, we're on Crawley watch. It's now 33 goals in Crawley's last eight games. That is still an average of over four per game after last week's 2-2 draw. Both teams to score has landed in all of those. And to update the stat I gave you last week, because it is still true, the only times both teams to score has not landed in 2018 at Crawley is when they're playing teams inside the bottom four. In the other 16 games they've played this calendar year, it has landed in all of them. In this weekend's game against Crewe, it is skinny, 4-7, but fear not, because Crewe are on a run of their own. 14 matches this season for Crewe have ended 1-0, and yet they are averaging 3 goals per game, which tells you just how many goals the other matches have had. And what it doesn't tell you is 7 of the 1-0 scorelines came in their opening 15 matches of the season, since when they're probably the highest goals per game side in the entire division. In Crewe's last 11, for instance, both teams to score has landed in 10 of 11, over 2.5 has landed in 10 of 11. The time either of those didn't land was last week against a Morecambe side who don't really do over 2.5 goals. Also, the 10 games before last week's blip, Crewe matches were also averaging 4 goals per game. Crewe's last 11 games, 41 goals. This is two irresistible forces meeting two very easily movable objects. So why try to pick a winner between Crawley and Crewe when over 2.5 goals is a backable 4-6, and why back over 2.5 when there's every chance over 3.5 goals could land? That's this week's nap at 2-1.
And that is it for this week's edition of the Punt Podcast. Thank you everyone for tuning in. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you to Lee Phelps, who was making his third successive appearance on the podcast, and of course to Derek McGovern and Paul McCarthy, our guest from the FWA, the Executive Secretary of the FWA, who sets up the guest each and every week. So thank you to Paul for his thoughts on Wenger and those Champions League semi-finals. And last but not least, our usual group of Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross for their look at the lower leagues, and Sam Norris for his best bet in Europe. You can check out all this betting at sports.williamhill.com or on the William Hill app. And until Monday, have an enjoyable weekend. Check out the betting at williamhill.com, and we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Goodbye.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.